Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by this morning. Well, it's Friday. We made it through another week, and it is Good Friday, which I hope is true. I hope it's a great Friday for everybody. And it's recap day here on Renee's Heart to Heart. This week we talked about a show that I'm going to call Meeting of the Minds, and we will continue to have Meeting of the Mind shows in regard to relationships and how we work with the people we have relationships with. Monday we talked about parents and kids and vice versa. And Tuesday, of course, we did a Bullies to Buddies show. We haven't done one of those in quite a while. And it's always interesting to talk about the workbook from Bullies to Buddies and the things that Izzy Kalman teaches, because even though it's designed for the adults in the world to help the kids, I believe it's just as beneficial for us adults, because it doesn't seem to matter how old we are or what kind of circles we travel in. There are still bullies out there, no matter who you are, what you are, how old you are, etc. And a lot of the things that Izzy talks about are what I call social graces. Being able to deal with the things that happen to you with a kind of a decorum, so that you stay in charge of what's happening to you. And that's a lesson that we can learn over and over and over again, because we all have opportunities to feel intimidated. We all have opportunities to feel like the underdog, like the person that's being ostracized, picked on, singled out, all of those things. It happens to all of us every day. And the deal is to learn how to deal with it, period. How to not let it take over your life, not let it affect how you feel about yourself. And I know this is going to sound surprising, but also not let it affect how you feel about others, because the way you feel about others has a lot to do with your own personal negativity. And if you spend your life being angry with other people and thinking that other people are the reason that you're in a bad place, that's not good. And it doesn't help you. It doesn't serve you in any way. So the Bullies to Buddies days are important. Thursday, we talked about something that's absolutely horrific, and that is about the woman who over a 10-year span gave birth to and actually ended the lives of 6 newborn babies. She gave birth to 7. The 7th was born, stillborn, maybe because there was some divine intervention. And the other 6, she just hid them in a garage. Horrible story. Made me think about it all day, a good part of the night last night, wondering what on earth could be going on in somebody's head to, first of all, let them hatch such a plan, let them carry out such a plan, and let them live with such a plan. So it was an interesting week. So let's bring Shell in so we can start talking about everything we talked about all week. Good morning, Shelly.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, it was a short week, but what an interesting week.
I got a wonderful, it's not actually the video, but it's an advertisement for it, and of course the people that made it are trying to get a little bit of financial support for it. but it's called Bullies and Friends, and it's an acclaimed documentary on bullying and youth suicide prevention. And it includes a lot of the people we've talked about in the last year.
Wow.
And I was, you know, that one of the statements that they make is that it's suicide that relates to some form of bullying is right up there with the number one killer of teenagers today.
Wow.
That just blows me away, you know.
Yeah, that,
I mean, it really blows me away.
That's astonishing. That's like a staggering comment to try to wrap your brain around with all
mm-hmm.
the things that can affect a child's, you know, life, accidents, illnesses, the rise of childhood cancers now and diabetes, and that one of the number one killers is them taking their own lives from something that from a societal standpoint can be stopped if people would pay attention and start interacting proactively, but in a helpful way, not in a reprimandatory way. And it's so that I'm really grateful to Izzy for that, because I'm hoping that it starts a movement around the United States where, you know, people start taking this more seriously.
Well, I think this video that they've done has generated enough help so that there are some communities or some states that are actually prosecuting, which Izzy is kind of against relying on. I don't know that he's against their legal punishment, but he is against having that be the rule that's supposed to stop it.
Right.
And but there is a I can't remember the city. It doesn't really matter. I don't even know if they told us. But there is a court that is actually punishing, hearing the stories of and punishing these kids that have participated in bullying to the point of someone taking their own life. So, and in the video, like I said, what I was sent and what I posted to my page, shared to my page, is the woman who organized this and some of her helpers talking about it and raising money. It's not the documentary itself. So it is interesting how these kind of things affect different people, I think, and it always makes me realize that, you know, you just never really know who's going to be next. And like I just said in the beginning of the show today, I don't know if we all realize that the taking of your own life is like the saddest thing and that I can even imagine for the people you leave behind, because you made the choice to leave them. And that's staggering to most parents, to most friends, to most siblings, to everybody. Every time I have counseled or sat with somebody who is going through a bereavement period because somebody that they loved so much took their own life, that's what you hear them say over and over and over again. So,
well, you're leaving your family and friends with all the what ifs, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
What if I had said the right thing, or what if I had realized he was or she was that upset, or what if? And they start running all these scenarios, you know, and they blame themselves. That's one of the things that, you know, somebody contemplating taking their own life, they need to understand that the people left behind blame themselves because they feel that they should have seen something, said something, done something, not said that one harsh word, that now they're thinking that one harsh word they said is why you did it, you know. So it's like when somebody's contemplating that because they're in so much pain, instead of ending their life, they should go to one of these people that they're going to be leaving behind. There has to be that one individual that you can talk to, either that or go to a clergyman. If you're Jewish, go to your rabbi. If you're Catholic, go to your priest. Go and talk, mention it to somebody that your life is so out of control, so unhappy or fearful or whatever it is that's pushing you to that degree, and tell them that you're to the point that you feel that, that you need to end your life. And this way you can get some assistance in helping you through it, helping you to think better about it, because you know that song, 24 Little Hours, you know? The bottom line is you hear all these stories about a young person that was about to commit suicide, and then that one person said the one thing that got their attention, and here they're telling the story 10 years later of how they came that close, and now they're happy to be alive, you know. But it was that one little intervention that got their attention. They decided to wait, and then they no longer wanted to. So it's it is a tragedy, and there's nothing that compares to it. If a child dies of an illness, you know, you all do the best you can to heal the child's body. But when a child takes its own life, that's when everybody in that child's circle now starts blaming themselves, and it's very destructive to the family dynamic.
Well, and I think that, you know, especially a parent, I have been twice. More in my life, I have known the people involved, but twice I've been very close, very, very close to the situation. And I can still remember the face of a father at the funeral. And he came home and found his adult son hanging. And I never, before or since, seen anyone sobbing so hard in my life. I mean, he couldn't even talk, and it was 3 days after the fact at the funeral that I saw him several times, but at the funeral, of course, when he was in the place of family and loved ones and people that he knew cared about him. Of course, that's when you are at your most vulnerable. And right. It was awful. I can still hear him and see him in my mind's eye. And it is awful, awful thing, because it's a choice that someone you care about makes to leave this world. And like you just said, the what ifs, or the maybe I could have, maybe I should have, all those kind of things come just snowballing in on somebody who's left behind. So, and especially children. Oh, God, I don't know. I've never felt that sad. I've been angry and sad both before in my lifetime, certainly many times in 65 years. But I've never felt like that. So, I guess talking about it, I'm kind of talking out of school, because a lot of people who have been there before would look at me and say, you don't get it because you've never been there. And that's probably true. But
person who's an alcoholic talking about just abstaining and not taking that next drink, because you really don't know what the pull is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And although I enjoy taking a drink, I'm not an alcoholic. I've never had those tendencies. I can have compassion for somebody that has that affliction, and I understand that it's not the same. Even when I smoke cigarettes, I never got addicted to the nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
And I got addicted to the mannerisms and that kind of stuff, but I could start and stop on a dime when I used to smoke. and go 6 months without picking up a cigarette, buy one pack, smoke it, and then quit again. And it used to drive my friends who did smoke nuts because they couldn't do that. But I never got addicted to it. And it's not because I'm a better person or anything like that. It's because I don't have the genetic makeup that allows me to get addicted. There are some people that can't get addicted. And there are some people that if they go into certain behavior cannot not get addicted because it's in their genetic makeup. And once you understand that, there are people who can become so depressed that they can actually think of and follow through with taking their lives, and that there are other people that can't ever go there. And again, it has a lot to do with our genetic makeup, with how the brain functions. Certain people are born with brain chemistry that actually perpetuates some of these things, like being able to commit suicide, being able to become an addict, because they can't go to the highest levels of feeling satisfaction and joy from life. And if that's compounded by bullying or being exposed to drugs and things like that, now you're taking a scenario and having it play out with the worst possible outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is certainly, it's kind of a sign of the times, although I have read some stories and I've shared them on the air, that suicide in children has been a lot more prevalent than I ever had any idea it was. And through the years, I mean. And still, for me, it's like the biggest travesty of all the things that we talk about. The biggest
are travesty. Are the articles that you're reading saying that it's prevalent or that it's on the rise? I mean, is there more childhood suicide today because of everything that's going on and all the pressures and media and stuff like that? Or is it just being talked about more?
No, they say it's on the rise. They say it's on the rise. And they say that, and it's, of course, you're right about the media, about the fact that it's not hush-hush. I think there could have been times way back a long time ago when things like this were done by children, especially in royalty, according to some of the things I've read about, because in royalty, life was tough. And you, I mean, it seems like it was wonderful, beautiful, but it wasn't, because the demands on a very young child who was about to sit on a throne at age 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or things like that was really, really difficult times. So there were things like that going on then as well, although not the same kind of reported incidents that there are today. And, of course, it has a lot to do with our media. It has a lot to do with the fact that the lives of others now, thanks to the media, are open books. For all of us, whoever wants to look at it. So I think that makes a difference, too. But
and also, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, like with the cyberbullying also, bullying today can be relentless. It can be 24/7. It's not just when you run into them at school anymore. You can be being attacked literally around the clock now.
Exactly. And that seems to have a lot to do with the big uprise. Is the cyberbullying. The cyberbullying, and of course we've talked about this many, many times on the show, and being able to say whatever you feel like saying on a website, on a Facebook, on any kind of a social website, and not having any repercussions because nobody knows who you are, opens the door to a lot of anger, a lot of things that wouldn't normally be said if you're standing face-to-face with somebody. And that's a sad part of this whole generation with the social websites, the texting. I mean, yes, there's a phone number, but, you know, there are a lot of kids today. I mean, 5 years ago, everybody was carrying a cell phone. Now, a lot of kids are carrying 3 or 4 different kinds of modes of technology that they can, iPads, the iPhones, the
tablets.
Tablets, everything you can reach out. Everything you can have contact with other people. And mm-hmm. there's not always a mode of recognition with what you put out there in on a Facebook contact or something. I mean, ironically, this morning when I was looking through Facebook to see if anybody sent me anything, and they did, that's how this video was here this morning, but there's a lot of people now that I don't know on Facebook by their name, and I'm thinking to myself, how did I get all these friends? I didn't friend this person. Then I click into it, and I find out it's somebody I know, but they've changed their Facebook name. Now they call themselves not by their name. They call themselves by something they believe in. I mean, I have a lot of raw foodie and raw beauty and people that call themselves names that have to do with the raw lifestyle, because I have so many friends
right.
that are to the raw food lifestyle. But I'm like, when did they become this person? So a lot of them, there's one, Waheed Mikey. Have no idea who that is. They're on my Facebook. It's a lot. There's a lot of that. I mean, there's still a lot of people that are just using their names, which is what we should be doing. But there's a lot of this other stuff as well. So, but I do want to, before we get on this one subject, we will talk about this Bullies and Friends video on next week's Bullies to Buddies show on Tuesday morning. So if any of you out there would like to know more about it, you can go to my Facebook page. It's on my Facebook page, and it's on my homepage as well. So if you want to look at it and get to the link, please help yourself. And the lady that did it is very articulate, and you'll enjoy listening to her. But we did talk about relationships on Monday. We talked about the relationships between parents and kids and what's easy and what isn't easy, and a lot of talk about the relationships between a mom and a daughter, or the relationships between a dad and the son, and the expectations of parents of their children, and vice versa. And it isn't easy, because, you know, you're torn between being a parent or being somebody that your kids love to death. Not always compatible, by the way. You can't always be the person that teaches them everything and has them live by the golden rule, so to speak, and still be really, really close to them, because then they know that you won't abide this and you won't abide that, and then instead of just not doing it, they quit telling you that they're doing it. So it is, that's a tough relationship, but it's one that most of us maintain through a lifetime, and there are good ones and there are bad ones. But we had some interesting discussions about how it also turns around at a certain point in time. Like my Valerie, when her mom got early onset dementia that turned to Alzheimer's, and she became the mom, and her mom became the kid, literally, in every way you can imagine. So it is, life has a strange cycle with that. And we talked about, of course, the relationship between siblings the week before, and friends and workers and things like that. And relationships are important to all of us. And any relationship that's worth having is worth working at. I think we decided that hands down. We are in total agreement of the fact that if you want to have a good relationship, you got to work at it and make it good. You want to add anything about Monday's show, honey?
Yeah, well, I mean, like what we talked, well, you've just mentioned a lot of it, but also the dynamics are so, there's such a variety of dynamics, because you have some children that have incredible relationships with one parent and not another. Like I had mentioned that my friend had an incredible relationship with her father. So whenever you see these movies about father-daughter relationships, that was her. She was just so bonded. Her mother was almost cruel to a point while they were growing up. Very, very overly aggressive, overly disciplinarian, but unreasonably so. And in my particular case, it was the reverse. My mom gave me a nice, strong moral upbringing and background. I liked the way she treated people. I liked the way people acted. You know, I liked the way people liked my mom because of what a sweet person she was. But my father was very bigoted and prejudiced, very mean, very cruel to a point. And he was the over-disciplinarian. But again, out of context, unreasonably so, to the point of being cruel. So I'd never had that father-daughter relationship, and my friends never had that mother-daughter relationship. And you always see movies about the bonds, you know, that kids can have with their parents. And then I've had other friends that had wonderful relationships with both their parents, and other friends that both their parents were basically dysfunctional, and the person actually brought themselves up. So there's so many different family dynamics.
Yeah.
And the one thing to come out from all of that, I think, and this could actually be a show, just one concept could be a future show, is that regardless of what your upbringing is, and that plays a huge role in how people evolve and what they grow into and as an adult, but I think it's 50-50. I think 50% of it is the character of the individual themselves, because we've seen people that grew up in wonderful families where the parents loved each other. It was a good, you know, a good household, and yet the person just grew up, you know, kind of not okay, did things that weren't okay, got into criminal activity. And then we've seen other people that have grown up in the worst possible family environment, maybe even got ripped away from their family at a young age because of violence, got put in foster homes, and then the foster homes were all screwed up. And this person grew up to be one of the best contributors to society, and very moralistic and very proactive and always helping people. So it really does come down to the individual in a lot of cases. So people, you can look at people's upbringing and where they came from as why they might have been directed in one direction or another. But it's never really an excuse for a person having a bad life, because you have so many examples of people that came out of bad situations and made their lives better and the lives of people around them better. So that would be an interesting show to do, to actually bring up some examples of people that have really made a mark through major, major adversity. Or
yeah,
maybe in spite of their upbringing.
Right. Well, honestly, I think those kind of people are notably recognized on a regular basis, I believe, because I think when we see somebody who is a bona fide survivor of that kind of a lifestyle, usually people know it, and they talk about it. I think it's recognition of being able to overcome the obstacles that you can't do anything about in the moment as a child and be able to grow past them is an amazing thing. And I think there's quite a few people that you and I both know that overcame adversity. And I think the biggest point to make about that is that you can. And that's what you should take from that knowledge, is that you can, no matter what is going on in your life and what kind of adversity you are face to face with, you yourself can overcome anything. But you have to put out the effort, and you have to have the stamina, and you have to do it. Lay down every time somebody tells you to doesn't make you very strong. So I'm not one of those people who thinks you should butt heads with everybody you come across, but I do think that you should learn how to stand up for yourself. And, of course, in the Bullies to Buddies segment of our shows, whenever we talk about that, that's one of the things we talk about. It's okay to have somebody give you their opinion, a friend I'm talking about, if you're talking about your teacher, a mentor, your parent, somebody like that, an older family member who's trying to, you know, kind of like guide you a little bit through life, be respectful to them and listen. But I also believe that when the time is right, you make your own decision as to whether or not what they've shared with you and taught you is your way. And I'm not saying if somebody tells you to be a good person, you decide, oh, I don't want to be a good person, I'm going to be an asshole. I don't mean that. I mean picking and choosing what suits you is what makes you stronger. But listening to the input of others gives you a lot more choices to choose from. So it's smart to at least listen, especially when you know somebody cares about you and they're trying to explain something to you. So let's move on to Bullies to Buddies. We talked a lot about the anti-bully movement and how it created a victim mentality. In other words, it makes the kids that are being continually bullied start believing that they deserve to be bullied. They start believing that they're not good enough. And that's a bad thing. We don't want that to happen. Of all the things that can happen to somebody who's chronically picked on, that's one of the worst things. And, of course, that's what, you know, that's what manifests the suicides and things like that. But if we can teach them how to stand up for themselves and know that what's being said to them is not true, it's somebody else's opinion, it really has nothing to do with who they are, what they are, and who they're going to be, then that gives them an inner strength, and they can get past that.
Right.
And that's
right.
He tries.
Right. In other words, instead of making it a crime for somebody to say something mean or criticize you or make fun of you, it's the opposite side of teaching people how not to care about that, how not to be negatively impacted. So this person over here can say whatever they want to say, and I have a good enough feeling about myself where I'm just not going to respond to that, and they're just going to basically fizzle down. So then you have no inappropriate or reprimandatory actions being taken towards that person, and they just kind of fizzle on their own, and they whatever they were trying to get out of being mean to you, now they're going to have to find another way of working out their issues because they're not going to get it that way. If everybody they try to bully and be mean to is just kind of nonchalant about it and don't care, then it puts it back on that person, the person who's trying to be a bully. Now they're going to have to find another way to deal with whatever was put in there to begin with, you know. And I think it's so important what we bring out in this show is that bullies are suffering also. A person doesn't become a bully if they're okay with themselves. If you're a happy person, you don't want to make other people unhappy. So if you're of that mindset, that means there's something not right with you. And so it means that that person needs help also. So and I agree that the current anti-bullying movement, which criminalizes and we're talking just straightforward bullying now, just saying mean things and being a knucklehead to people, not physical violence, not hurting somebody because now you're getting into criminal activity, not bullying activity, but just true bullying activity actually can be inspired out of a person by helping them deal with what's putting them there to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's real quick stop on that right there. And, of course, we've said this a million times, but there's always might be somebody else listening who's never heard us say this, and that is the fact that there's a difference between whomping the hell out of somebody and telling somebody that they're ugly or calling them pizza face or anything along those lines. Totally
right.
Different scenario. The video that was on right this minute, I love that show. It's on at 12:30 every day after the noon news on it's our Channel 5. I think it's NBC. They showed a video of two girls, kind of like Shanghai and this other girl, in a mall, and beating the hell out of her. I mean, knocking her down, yanking her hair, slamming her head into the wall, and people watched. I mean, finally, it was on the mall camera, finally somebody, a security guard or somebody, stopped them. But that is an assault. That is an assault with intent to do harm. That is, legally speaking, a crime. But if they'd have just stood in the mall and called her fat ass or, you know, worse things than that, like young people seem to know all these disgusting words that they can say to each other, that's different. And that's
right.
Bullying. And that you can't take somebody into a court of law and have them charged with calling you fat ass.
Right.
You can't. And the judge
right.
will laugh you out of the courtroom. But
right.
you've got lumps all over the top of your head because two girls just jammed your head into the wall and yanked your hair so that you're all swollen from the hair pulling and everything. That's different. That's an act of assault and violence, and that is punishable. Now,
right.
in this video that she talked about, she showed a picture of one of the girls that is being tried in a court of law for cyberbullying after being told not to and drove one of these young girls to suicide.
Wow,
so
you mean she was actually brought up on, like, charges or something for cyberbullying and didn't quit?
Yes.
And this was before
right.
the young girl had committed suicide?
No, it was afterwards. It was afterwards
wow.
from what I understand. Like I said, the video is not in full. It just shows excerpts from what it's going to be about. But there is a picture of her, and it says, you know, that they talk about her and the fact that, and they have this judge and this court system someplace that is actually going to start, if suicide is the result of bullying that has been persistent and after being told to lay off somebody by authorities, probably teachers, counselors, other parents, whatever, and it continues and drives somebody to that brink, then they're trying to come up with some kind of a law that makes that punishable in a courtroom. For me,
well, one of the things I think is an interesting point, and then we can move on, but it was just something you said, is that when we talk about the difference between bullying and criminal activity being that if somebody's just teasing you or, you know, kind of making your life a little miserable with words, or if they're touching you, which is accosting you, you know, whether they're poking you with pencils or pushing you into a locker or punching you, that's a criminal act because now they've physically touched you. But when it comes to cyberbullying and some of those where it's words and it's relentless, where the person can't get away from, like they can't open their phone up without having texts blow up from you and that kind of thing, where you're telling them to kill themselves, I think that's going past the point. I think that's going into threatening behavior. There are certain type of words that we can use that are just annoying and, you know, like, oh, my God, get a life. You know, you think I'm ugly. You think my ears are too big. You think this about me. Who cares, you know? But when people are actually walking up to you saying you're a loser, you should go kill yourself, that's different. That's threatening conversation. That instills that's not just being mean. That's almost trying to direct somebody to harm themselves. So whether you're saying I'm going to get you or you should get yourself, that falls into a different level of, I believe that comes out of the realm of bullying is what I'm saying. Even though it's still words, it's words that can actually direct somebody to either incite violence in another person or incite violence against themselves. And that is illegal.
That's right. There are legal ramifications for harassment and stalking. There
right.
are legal ramifications for those things.
And that's what that would come down to. Even though you're not physically touching the person, that would fall under those type of criminal behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it's repetitious, then that's what it's called, harassment and stalking. And then
mm-hmm.
that does fall into a different category, I would believe. But
right.
Things moving forward with that, there's going to be a lot of people who embrace the world of courtrooms and that kind of justice. There's going to be people that embrace prison and jail as being the ultimate punishment. And eventually, those decisions will be made by the powers that be. However,
what's the name of that documentary that you mentioned at the beginning of the show?
It's called, I've forgotten it already as well. It's called Bullies and Friends.
And you just saw it this morning. I mean, you haven't watched it yet, right?
Well, I watched what was sent to me, but it's the woman that wrote the documentary. It's about, you know, she's just telling you how she put it together and everything.
Is it actually out, or is this something saying this is coming soon and type of deal?
It's out and available.
Oh, okay.
So,
I'll check it out. I'm curious to see how long of a documentary it is.
Well, she's I liked the get on my Facebook page and watch what is on there.
Yeah, I will
share page and but it's I like everything she said, and I think that it may make a difference because a lot of times, you know, we also are talking about kids, so a lot of times kids are stopped by ramifications. Not idle threats necessarily, but ramifications sometimes sink in after they realize that their best friend just got put in a halfway house or something like that for poor behavior. Maybe it will make a difference with some kids. I don't know. I'm glad that's not my decision. But I do think that the whole idea that we're trying to do is to teach you kids that are out there. Yesterday, AJ told the teacher that another little boy out during playtime rammed a toy or something into the private area of another little boy and did it with intent, and AJ went to the teacher and told the teacher. The boy that it happened to didn't tell anybody, but AJ did. He came home and said to his mom, "This is what I did." You know, and somebody said, "Well, that makes you a tattletale." And Diana and I went crazy, and I said, "We tell him to tell people about that stuff all the time. He doesn't need to go tattling in school when something happens to him. He should come home and tell us if he doesn't want to be known as a tattletale and have the ramifications from that. But as an outsider who sees something like that done, that's what's wrong with the rest of the damn world. Nobody thinks it's any of their business." So we gave him high fives and hugs and everything because he helped this other little boy. So, and when Izzy talks about not being the one that goes over and says, "Oh, Mrs. Every, Renee's being mean to me. Renee said I stink," or what, you know, like the scenario that Izzy did with me and the other girl at the seminar.
Right.
That's. And seeing a physical act like that directed at another kid and nobody says anything. I was glad, AJ told the teacher. And
now,
I don't
who
know,
said that he was a tattletale, one of the kids or the teacher?
Well, when he came home, one of the bigger kids said, "Now everybody's going to say you're a tattletale." And Diana and I both said, "No, I think that he did the right thing," and that's what we expect all of you to do, not ignore something like that. What if the next time the kid takes that same whatever he rammed at him like that and clunks him over the head with it and gives him a concussion?
That's dangerous stuff.
So.
Yeah, there's certain behavior that you can't ignore. It's not like he just, you know, said something mean to him or whatever. I mean, we're talking about physical contact here. That's not tattling.
Right, right. I mean, you know, and with little kids, you know, hands-on stuff is pretty normal. So you do have to get a handle on it. I mean, there are some classrooms I've been in with, like, first and second graders that they're told that they are not to touch another kid, not to touch them. I remember when we all held hands in kindergarten and first grade, when we walked in the hallways and everything, and you were given a buddy to hold hands with, and so were my kids. But now we're at a different point. Times have changed, and you're supposed to keep your hands to yourself. And that's a big thing, keeping your hands to yourself. So let's move on because we'll be out of time again. We're down to 15 minutes. We talked Wednesday. We didn't have a show. But on Thursday, we talked about this big thing in the current events about this woman that gave birth to and took the lives of 6 newborn babies. And seventh baby was stillborn. And as I said earlier, I think that might have been divine intervention. And no, I haven't been able to find any other stories, but I will certainly look this weekend to find out if anything has changed about that. And she's in jail on a $6 million bond, and her life, for all intents and purposes, is probably over. So that is what it is, but that it's a horrible thing to understand that somebody could do something like that. And we talked at length about the fact, Shelley mentioned, that maybe the methamphetamines that we read about in the very beginning of the article, that the husband, during that time, the husband was accused of cooking methamphetamine and was put in prison for 9 years. So Shelley suggested that perhaps the mom was under the influence of that, and that's a big, big possibility. Or later, after I contemplated everything that we talked about, I thought to myself, maybe she was afraid to bring a baby in because that meth was cooking in the house. We may never really know the truth because, I mean, she just said, yes, they're mine, and they took her away. There hasn't been any kind of conversations that have been printed by the media that you can even get a clue as to why she did what she did. But she did it, and nobody knew it, and almost got away with it. So we discussed what could be going on in her head, and we discussed mental illness, because we talk a lot about mental illness, and we talk a lot about the ramifications of mental illness. And, of course, we have to assume that this young woman was not mentally on top of her game, whether or not she was... I don't know, going off the deep end. I don't even know what the terminology would be for where she was, but normal people
Well, one of the disturbing facts that came out is that they read, there was an excerpt of a letter she had written very early on after she had her three daughters, but before all of this tragedy happened, where she wrote a letter to the court pleading them not to take her husband away after he had been convicted of the drug charge with the methamphetamines. And, she, you know, she said, I know this is a good man. He's a good father. Please don't take him away from our three sweet daughters. I mean, it was loving words towards him, loving words towards the daughters. And now she's almost like an empty person. They, you know, here she's showing no emotion towards all these pregnancies. You know, what man got her pregnant? Was it her husband? You know, who got her pregnant all those times and knew she was pregnant? I mean, they had to know she was pregnant if they're being intimate with her. You know, I mean, there was somebody else participating in that. And how did that individual, you know, not know that she was pregnant? Or did she have a secret life where she was being promiscuous and, you know, all these different guys out there, one-night stands, and she just kept getting pregnant and then decided to wait the baby? So there's so much complexity to this, so many unanswered questions, and your imagination just goes off into, like, what could have been the possible reason. And I think when we do hear the full story, unfortunately, I expect it to be somewhat more disturbing than what we've already heard, because I can't wrap my brain around how somebody 10 years ago could have written a letter like that and now today be basically emotionless. So something happened to turn her, because like you said, one of the pregnancies that she terminated would have been right after her last daughter. So why did why was her last daughter allowed to live and be raised? And obviously at one point she loved her, and then every baby from then on she stopped. So there was something going on, and that's why I almost suspected some sort of incest. I'm really curious to find out if the DNA shows that all seven babies were hers, because maybe that's why she chose not to allow them to be born anymore. If the husband was actually, you know, if these children were a product of his children, that might have been why she just stopped allowing them to be born if the husband was going to be going after the young girls. But again, this is all conjecture. This isn't news. I'm not saying this is what happened. I'm just saying this is one of the possibilities that could have made her snap.
Well, I think that everything you just said is a possibility, but I want to make sure everybody understands something. The demise of these newborn babies was during the time that he was there. He pleaded guilty in 2005 to two counts of possessing chemicals intended to be used in manufacturing methamphetamine. And in August of 2006 is when he was sentenced to prison. Now, the children, according to the report, were born between the years 1996 and 2006. So definitely the husband was there. He was a part of this family, and she had already committed this horrific crime before she wrote that letter. So this was
I'm putting the wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I had the timeline in reverse.
Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted to make sure everybody else understood. It happened. According to, I guess, the coroner was able to come up with the timeline between 1996 and 2006 at her former home in Pleasant.
Then when did they become estranged? When did they become estranged?
Because he went to prison for 9 years, and when he came home, he didn't go back to her.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand that part of the scenario. Okay, gotcha.
So she's in another town. She is living with the other daughters in Utah, or I think Utah. It doesn't matter. Salt Lake City, yeah. And she's there, and he goes in to clean up the house that they had lived in together because it belonged to his parents, and that's when they find the first baby. He calls her where she lives now and says, "Do you know about this?" And she said, "Yes, it's my baby." And when they search and find all seven of them, it doesn't talk anymore in the article about whether or not they've spoken again since that original contact. My guess is because she's in prison, nobody's talking to her.
How could he live there in that house with her during all those years and not know this was going on?
Well,
unless they had no relationship during that time.
Well, they would have to. You can't get impregnated without having a relationship, and each child takes 9 months.
Having
so
affairs. She wasn't a prostitute.
Huh?
Who's to say she didn't, you know, a lot of people that get into meth become prostitutes. Who's to say she wasn't prostituting herself?
Well, they don't ever say. So that's conjecture, because there's no statement in the article that says she was addicted to methamphetamines.
Well,
she was never arrested.
Understand that. It's just the fact that who manufactures meth without being a user.
Well, I know a lot of people who do it just for the money, honey, and don't ever get using it.
Right.
So, again, that's conjecture too. I don't know if that's what happened. Your idea yesterday made sense to me, though, when you said, "Well, if she was involved with these kind of drugs, who knows what her behavior was like?" And that's true.
But there's actually no evidence that she was.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
This horrific behavior, it points to that, but there isn't anything that really tells us that's what happened.
So when you're talking about postpartum depression, as difficult as it is for any mother to imagine how severely altered somebody's mind can become, where a mother could, you know, take the lives of her own children, it's a singular act. You know what I'm saying? this was something that was premeditated and repetitive over a 10-year period of time and was done not once or twice, but seven times. The fact that the last child was stillborn, if it hadn't been stillborn, she probably would have done the same thing just based on the repetition. But how do you keep getting pregnant when you know that you're not going to keep the child? So this is a very, very unusual, very disturbing, extremely disturbing case. I've just never heard anything like it before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, we've, on the show alone, we've talked about Yates, Andrea Yates, and some of the other women that have just had children to kill them. There's a famous book, I want to say it's called The Hand That Rocks the Cradle or something along those lines, who had Munchausers. And she would adopt children and take their lives and then run into the hospital and say her child was in distress and get all this attention, and that's all it was about. And she killed seven or eight children and got away with it for a long time, even though people recognized her name and through the hospital hotline, because some of the towns where she went were not that far away from each other. And in the very beginning, it was always at the same hospital. And still, no flags went up. Nobody did anything. Again, what did I just say about AJ? I said, one of the biggest problems is that we all think things aren't any of our business. And indeed, right, some things aren't any of our business. But when you see somebody being hurt, when you know somebody's life is in jeopardy, especially a child, and you don't do anything about it, shame on you. Shame on
right.
you. I told everybody yesterday, I did talk on the show about my friend who walked up to the woman who was beating the child by the pool. I told that story, right?
Right.
Did I tell that on the air?
What?
Did I tell that story on the air yesterday? Because I told everybody here at home, and now I can't remember whether I said it on the air or not.
Yes, I believe you did mention it on the air.
And but even she, somebody who is, an advocate for young people and children and works in this every day, didn't know what to do. She did something, but she wasn't sure what the smartest thing for her to do was going to be. So, of course, she called 911, and then she went over and got in the woman's face, and the woman started to fight with her and pulled her wig off of her and everything. But the point is, it's not, and every situation is different, so you can't just give somebody guidelines. So say if you're the next-door neighbor to this woman, and you barely know her, but it seems like every time you turn around, she looks like she's pregnant, but you never see a kid. Are you going to go tell somebody? Are you going to feel like a fool if you tell everybody that her weight just goes up and down?
Right. And the bottom line is, I got to be honest about this, and I think a lot of people would say the same thing. I've lived on my block for almost 14 years now, over 15 years now, and I can honestly say that I don't know what half my neighbors look like. I wouldn't even know. Yeah. I could be next to them on the line at Walmart and not even realize they were one of my neighbors, because we live in expansive properties out here. I never really see anybody, and people are so busy and they're in and out. And half the time we're leaving, getting in our car and driving away, and we don't even look to the right or the left. So in a lot of cases, I could see something like that happening in my next door neighbor's house, and I would be completely unaware of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's true of everybody. But we're out of time, and I want to make sure that I remember to say Happy Easter. Today is Good Friday, and I know that means something to many of you. I hope it's a beautiful, beautiful weekend with the people that you love and care about. And we'll be back on Monday. And I think it's finally starting to warm up north for those of you who are living up there. I saw a very funny picture of a little boy out on his patio covered with snow, and he's looking up at the sky and he's going, okay, enough already, and I thought to myself, I'll bet that's how every person up there feels. So Everybody go out and have a great day and a wonderful weekend. Enjoy your Easter Sunday, and we'll be back Monday morning. God bless everybody. Thanks.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone. Have a beautiful weekend.